I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Maria Konnikova wrote a book titled Mastermind about how to think like Sherlock Holmes and the confidence game about con artists. Her new book, The Biggest Bluff, is about what she learned about life, decision-making, chance, luck, and herself from the game of poker. She went from not knowing how many cards in a deck to competing in high-stakes tournaments and becoming a champion player at the World Series of Poker. Helping her deconstruct the game and how she played it was poker legend Eric Seidel, who taught her how to pay attention, keep her emotions in check, and to think of poker as jazz. Maria Konnikova got interested in poker after a particularly bad year when she got sick, her husband and mother lost their jobs, and her grandmother died. The game for her was a way to experience and understand the illusion of control and the role that luck and skill plays when we have to make a choice. She's a regular contributing writer to The New Yorker, a psychologist, and joins us by Skype. And Maria Konnikova, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, Marty.
Nice to have you with us. And to our listeners, especially if you play poker, we do want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can always tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Why do you think you're such a good poker player? And I have to say, I read some reviews of your book from people in the poker world, and they have watched you play, and they say you're really good at this game. Why do you think so?
I think it probably helped that I had a background in psychology, and not just any psychology. What I studied was specifically decision-making, risky decision-making under conditions of uncertainty, under hot emotional conditions. Now, at the time, I had no idea what poker was, so I had people play stock market games, but there are so many parallels there, and I had the vocabulary, I had the knowledge of the biases we exhibit. I had a way, this metacognitive awareness that helped me, I think, figure out what was going on a little bit faster. And it certainly did not hurt that Eric Seidel agreed to mentor me. When you want to learn something new, having one of the greatest people help you along. I mean, it's like saying I want to play basketball and asking Michael Jordan, and he's like, yeah, sure, let me teach you how to do a layup.
So was that luck that Eric Seidel wanted to help you?
Well, yes, absolutely. I got incredibly lucky that he said yes. I mean, I prepared a lot. So first, as any journalist, I just reached out to him, you know, cold called him. And I have to do that a lot as in my past work as a journalist. I reach out to a lot of people who are wonderful at what they do, who are much smarter than I am, and who are very intimidating on a lot of levels. Now, I still don't like it, but at least I'm used to doing it. And I reached out to him, and once he said, sure, you know, I'll talk to you, I didn't quite say, I want you to mentor me for a book. I said, I'm working on a new project. I'd like to talk to you about it. And then I prepared. I really prepared. I did my homework. I came out with printouts of psychological papers that I had found on poker. I really tried to show him that I would be able to add something to the relationship as well. And I think that that impressed him. But I think that most of all, he was interested to see, can I take this person who has a background in psychology, but no background in poker and no real math skills? My last math class was in high school. And can that psychological approach, can good thinking and hard work, in his words, still get you there? Could I learn to be good? And to him, it was this test of life philosophy, of his poker philosophy, because it was a very interesting way to say, okay, all of the young people coming in right now, they're mathematicians, they're statisticians, that's their approach. Can the other way still win? Yeah. I think for him, it was an interesting challenge.
And I do want to get to all of that. Is it true, though, that literally that you not just didn't know anything about poker, but you didn't know that there were 52 cards in a deck?
This is correct. For some odd reason, I was positive there were 54. I thought there were 54. I guess those jokers really made an impression of me. I have no idea. I mean, I never played cards. It's not something that I ever did. And I think I just tried to do some mental calculus. And like I said, my mental math, it got better as I played poker. But at the time, it was really not good because I hadn't had to do any mental math in a very long time. And somehow I decided 54 was a good number for the number of cards in a deck.
And you should
wrong. Seen Eric's face. I was wrong. There are not, in fact, for people listening, there are not, in fact, 54 cards in a deck. And if you think there are, you're going to have issues with calculating your odds.
Well, not to go into a great deal of detail, but a really tough year that you went through. You were very ill. And as I mentioned in my introduction, both your husband and your mother lost their jobs. Your grandmother died. I mean, this was a really tough year for you. Did you just feel, and I know you're interested in this idea of luck and decision making and chance. Did you just feel like, gosh, the luck has really turned against me this year?
Yes, I did. And the autoimmune condition I had made me for week-long stretches unable to really leave the house because I just became allergic to everything. I became allergic to clothes. Whenever anything touched my body, I would just erupt in hives, and it was incredibly painful, and then they wouldn't go away for days. So it was not a pleasant experience, but it also gave me a lot of time to think. And I think there's nothing quite like having a health scare, losing your health suddenly, especially when you think you've been doing everything right. I mean, I do yoga every day. I meditate. I eat well. I cook all of my meals. Even before COVID, I would cook all of my meals. And I thought, you know, I'm in control. I'm really doing everything I can for my body. And the body says, ha, 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 right. You know, I'm still allowed to malfunction. There's nothing quite like that to make you realize how much you take for granted. And that, sure, you know, you can work hard, but a lot of people work hard and then stuff happens, and it's not stuff that they can control. It's just luck. It's chance. It's this noise of the universe. And I had a lot of time alone with my thoughts to think about that. It did go back to a lot of the things I had studied. I'd been interested in the illusion of control for a very long time because that's what I found in my graduate work, that very, very smart people, when you put them in uncertain environments, in environments where they weren't controlling a lot of aspects, they claimed more agency than they should have. And when things didn't go well, they blamed other things and not themselves. And this was just a classic illusion of control. I control more than I actually do. Mm. And if things go wrong, it's not me. That I don't control, the bad stuff. And so this was a way to try to tackle that. I was looking for a way into that, a way to solve that conundrum and to figure out, okay, is there a way to battle the illusion of control? Is there a way to figure out where my skill ends and just chance begins?
Let me quote you from your book, because I want listeners to hear this, because I thought it was actually quite brilliant. And you write, "Poker stands at the fulcrum that balances two oppositional forces in our lives, chance and control. Anyone can get lucky or unlucky in a single hand, a single game, a single tournament. One turn and you're on top of the world. Another, you are cast out, no matter your skill, training, preparation, aptitude. In the end, though, luck is a short-term friend or foe. Skill shines through over the longer time horizon." You're saying a lot in those couple of sentences there, but in many ways, I feel like this is kind of the heart of what you were exploring in this book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is so much skill and so much chance in everyday life and in poker. And I do think it's very important to realize that anyone can win in one hand. Anyone can win in one tournament, in one game, because you can just get wonderful cards and you can get incredibly lucky. And this is true in life, too. You can just luck out and win the lottery, or something can happen and it has nothing to do with you. But if you keep playing over the long term, that skill will actually help. So in my mind, it's really powerful to realize that, because it helps you reframe mentally what's going on when luck is going against you. It helps you say, okay, you know what? Right now I'm on the bad side of variance, but if I keep thinking clearly, if I keep making the right decisions, if I keep positive, in control of my emotions, if I keep thinking through everything, then eventually over the long term, it will even out. And I'll find myself on the right side of that variance again.
Quoting your teacher, Eric Seidel, your mentor, he says many things, and you describe him as a dragonfly, which is an interesting description. But you say in many ways his motto is less certainty, more inquiry. Expand on that for us.
That is one of the most brilliant quotes that I've ever come across, and I'm so glad that you've picked it up.
It's brilliant.
It's such an amazing life motto. I mean, it has nothing to do with poker, even though he was using it to describe poker. What he means is be incredibly wary of anyone who says this is the right way. This is the way you in poker play a hand. This is how you're supposed to act here. This is what you're supposed to do here. Because there's no such thing as always. We can't ever be certain. Life is full of uncertainty, of unknown variables, of all of these things that we can't possibly be taking into account. And every situation is different. And he told me this when I was getting really frustrated with him, because he wouldn't tell me how to play a hand. He wouldn't say, you know, well, this is what you do. You raise here, you do this, you do that. He said, okay, let's think this through. Let's figure it out. And he was trying to teach me that what matters is the thought process. And the thought process might actually lead you to different outcomes. And you need to be okay with that. You need to realize that there are multiple ways of being and of acting. And you need to stay curious and be willing to explore them and be willing to change. Be willing to change your mind. Be willing to change your behavior. Be willing to say, okay, you know, I played this hand, and we can talk about metaphorical hands now.
Sure.
In this way, one time, but now the circumstances are changing. Even if I'm playing against the exact same person, maybe the environment has changed, maybe the dynamics have changed, and I need to constantly take that into account. And I think that that's actually a motto that he brings to all of his life, because he is one of the most curious people I've ever met. He just follows his passions everywhere. And that's why I think he's still so good at poker, because he's never certain of anything. He's always willing to grow. He's always willing to listen to more information. And he doesn't think, I know it all, I'm the best player in the world. Even though for a long time he is the best player in the world. And he still says, okay, what are the young people doing? How is the game changing? How is it evolving? Let me learn. Let me grow. And that's his attitude towards all of life. And it's just so inspiring that I hope that I can implement it in just some small way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're almost up on a break here. But one thing that he says and other people say, and it again sort of runs through the whole book about life and poker, which is the importance of paying attention. And that sounds like, you know, the importance of breathing, but the importance of paying attention.
Absolutely. And it does sound like the importance of breathing, but it's much more difficult, because breathing happens naturally and paying attention is hard. Our brains are not made to pay attention. We actually mind wander. That's how our brains are wired. That's why, you know, it's so difficult to focus, and it's so easy to have 20 tabs open on your browser and this and that. And everything is vying for your attention. I mean, it's a perfect storm for the way that our brains are actually wired. But you can make an active choice to say, I'm going to be present. I'm going to be in the moment. I'm going to be mindful. I'm actually going to choose to focus my resources on being aware of what's happening, being aware of what's happening to all the players and to me. And that's very powerful.
Well, I do want to talk about you playing poker. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation with Maria Konnikova. Again, she has a new book. It's called The Biggest Bluff: How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. And it's about how she has become a rather good poker player. Much more to talk about after this very short break. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. What's the role that luck and skill and chance plays in our lives? Our guest psychologist, Maria Konnikova, decided to find out by learning to play poker. Turns out she's rather good at the game and went from essentially knowing nothing about poker to becoming a champion. And again, her new book is called The Biggest Bluff. It's about what she learned at the tables, but also what she learned about herself and, frankly, about decision-making and life. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Maria, I'm going to quote you again. again from your book. But again, I just thought these were really nuggets that we should talk about. You write, you're not lucky because more good things are actually happening. You're lucky because you're alert to them when they do. Then you go on to quote a guy named William Beveridge, who wrote a book called The Art of Scientific Investigation. And he says, we need to train our powers of observation to cultivate that attitude of mind of being constantly on the lookout for the unexpected and make a habit of examining every clue that chance presents itself. And that really just picks up on what we were talking about right before the break.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that a lot of people look at, you know, scientific discoveries. So the Beveridge quote was talking about a lot of scientists, but also a lot of just discoveries in general, and think, oh, well, this guy just got lucky. He saw this in the lab and wow, it could have happened to me. Well, no, actually, because you need to be trained for it. You need to know what you're seeing. You need to actually be aware enough to say, oh, this isn't a failed experiment, or even though it might be, but it might be something else too. I need to look beyond it. I need to be open to it. This is also, it's funny, this actually kind of marries the pay attention and the less certainty, more inquiry, because you have to be open-minded. You have to be willing to think, wow, what is this? Why is this happening? You have to ask those questions rather than say, oh, you know, didn't work, throw it away. There's a very famous quote from Louis Pasteur, chance favors the prepared mind. But the full quote is actually, when it comes to observation, chance favors the prepared mind. And people tend to just cut off that first part. And the one we hear is the second part. But the first part is crucial because it's all about observation. It's all about preparing yourself, being aware enough that you're able to pick up on these patterns. Sometimes eureka moments are pattern recognition. But how do you experience that? Well, you need to be aware. You need to actually have the background. You need to have the preparation. You need to be willing to put the pieces together. Otherwise, it's just going to look like a mess, not like a pattern.
Well, let's talk about observation. Let's talk about tells and what you learned at the poker table. And I think for many of us amateurs or people who know nothing about the game, you think, oh, you look at the person's eyes and that will tell you, you know, what they're thinking or perhaps what's even in their hand. You say, no, it's the hands.
Yes.
How come the hands?
Well, first of all, how come not the eyes? I think that's the first thing. Mm. And we actually find that when people look at faces, they become worse than chance at figuring out if someone's lying or not. And I think it's because every single day we're used to controlling our faces. When you meet someone, if you don't particularly like them, you don't want your face to suddenly grimace. Oh, I can't believe this person is here. We get used to actually hiding a little bit of what's going on and being a little bit poker-faced in everyday life. And that's natural, and we're good at that. And instead, what people pick up on when they look at faces oftentimes are cues that have nothing to do with what the person is doing, but things like, oh, that jawline is correlated with trustworthiness. This all happens on a totally subconscious level. And so people aren't even aware that they're doing it, but it happens very frequently. There's wonderful work from Princeton University that shows just how quickly we make judgments based on facial features. So when you look at a face, you can really go wrong. And I found just some fascinating work, a lot of it done by Michael Slepian at Columbia University, who looked at the hands, the bodies, and the faces of poker players at the World Series of Poker, had people look at videos of all of these different parts to see where the tell would be. How could you tell if someone had a strong hand? How could you tell if someone was actually on the right side, that they believed in their cards? And he had people who knew nothing about poker look at these videos, and it turned out that the body didn't really do much. People were just a coin flip at figuring out if someone was strong or not. The face made them worse, but the hands were where the information lied. Wow. So it was how people handled the chips, how they handled the cards, the smoothness of their gestures. And it makes so much sense. Just like we're used to controlling our faces, we're not used to controlling our hands. How often do you really think, what are my hands doing right now? It's not a body part that we're paying as much attention to. The pulse is there. Our hands sweat. Their skin conductance. All of these different factors conspire to give a lot of information off in our hand gestures. And it's really interesting. This isn't just true in poker. There has been work in sports that people can actually look at rugby players. people who don't know anything about rugby and predict which direction they're going to go by looking at these sorts of things. So I think it's very interesting.
Well, I know that you looked at video of yourself playing, Maria Konnikova. So what did you learn about yourself? And perhaps what did you fix about how you play?
Well, it turns out that I did have some tells of my own. I thought I was very, very good, that I didn't have any tells at all. But I decided, just in case, that maybe I'd get an expert at analyzing this behavior to look at video of me playing. And he found out that I actually did have a lot of tells. I would do something that's very common for people. So I would double check my cards a lot. And that's not a great thing to do, because people might notice, you know, when you're strong, when you know your cards, if you have pocket aces, which is the best hand you can be dealt in all of poker, you're not going to double check them. You know exactly what you have. But if you have something like 8-9, for instance, you might forget, oh, was it 8-9 or was it 7-8? What suit was it? What, you know, what was going on? And so that kind of behavior might convey uncertainty. And also where and when and how frequently you do this. I would put things on my cards as a card protector. And he said, don't do that. And why don't you do that? Because you put things on your cards differently. There's different gestures. Once again, going back to the hands, your card protector goes on differently depending on the strength of your hands. And when you bet, you have to be so incredibly careful in how you're executing those gestures to make sure you're always doing it the exact same way. And one of the things I learned was, don't try to just standardize everything, because you're going to get tired and you're going to mess up, and then people will notice when you're messing up. Instead, try to, and I think this is so powerful just for everything, not just poker. Before you act, take a breath and think for a second. Take a pause and collect yourself and figure out intentionally what you're going to be doing. And that pause, that moment of reflection, will help you not give off information, will help you standardize without actually focusing on, oh, I have to move my hand in the exact same way. That moment of reflection is so important.
Let's talk about the fact that in professional poker, it is a largely male sport. I think, 97% of the players are men. So there you are, often, I guess, the lone woman in a tournament or at a table. How did you learn to deal with whatever was tossed at you, because you were the sort of outlier when it came to who was sitting there?
That was a really tough learning process. Eventually, I think it worked in my advantage and I was able to take advantage of it and actually start winning. But at the beginning, it made me lose a lot of money because, as you say, it is 97% male. And so there is a lot of sexism, and there is a lot of both meaning sexism and also casual sexism, because they don't ever really need to think about it. And I experienced so many situations where I realized that I was letting people bully me. I wasn't being aggressive enough. I was folding too much because I'd internalized so many gender stereotypes. And when I realized that, that wasn't very pleasant. I realized, wow, you're folding cards because you don't want conflict. You don't want them to not like you. You want them to think you're nice. And so I would just fold it to, here, take the pot. I don't want to fight. It's all good.
You would do that. Really?
I would do that. Yes, at the beginning. And I didn't realize I was doing it, but I was. I was so unsure of myself that all of these hangups ended up coming out. And I didn't think I had those hangups. I've studied gender biases. I've written about this. I know the literature. And I was positive that I didn't have any of this internalized, but I did. And so I ended up having to work on it and realize, wow, you're doing this. This is not good. This is preventing you from making good decisions, because instead of thinking clearly, you're letting all of these things get to you. You're letting them win. And so I had to learn to flip it on its head and say, okay, you see me as a woman. You don't see me as a poker player. So how do you see women? How are you going to play against a girl? And that differed from person to person. But if I could figure that out, then I could adjust the way that I played and actually be aggressive in the right spots at the right time and do what I was doing before, be more passive, but for a reason, not because I didn't want conflict, but because I realized that that was the best way to beat someone. If people underestimate you, that can be incredibly powerful, because you can take advantage of their underestimation by pulling off stuff that they just don't think you're capable of, because they say, oh, she's just a girl, she can't do that.
Do you still want to be liked by the players?
Sure, but I can do that by being friendly and nice.
And hard-nosed, right?
Exactly.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Maria Konnikova. We are talking about poker, something that she learned to play after a tough year. And it's a fascinating book that she's written called The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. She's a regular contributing writer for The New Yorker. She actually has a PhD in psychology at Columbia University and has written books about con men and about deception. So all of this kind of fits together rather neatly. And again, you can join us Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. So there is a role of luck. There's certainly a role of skill, and skill you get over time. But I also get the very strong impression from you, there's also homework. I mean, that there's a lot of preparation. Maybe that's unique to you, but a lot of preparation that goes into being a good player. And I'd like to just talk about that. So generally speaking, as we think about if poker is like life, how we can transfer some of that to some of our life skills.
Absolutely. Yes, there's a lot of preparation. A lot of people look at poker, just like a lot of people look at writing and say, oh, that's easy. Anyone can do it. You know, you can sit at the table and, you know, play cards and win money. And I know how to write, so I can write a book. That's easy. That's an outsider's view. And I think people underestimate just how much preparation is involved in actually playing well and doing well at what you do. And so that's one of the reasons that I said at the beginning, even before I knew whether or not I'd be good, before I knew how long this would take or any of it, this was at the very start of the journey. I said, I have to go on leave from The New Yorker. I can't be writing at the same time. I have to treat this like a full-time job. And I did. So 7 days a week, I would work for, depending on the day, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours a day. I'd be either playing or studying. When I studied, I wasn't just looking at a video or reading a book, I was doing what's called active learning. So if a video was a half an hour long, it would often take me an hour or 2 hours to watch, because every time I didn't understand something, I would stop, I'd rewind, I'd write down questions, I'd take notes. And same with all of the books. I would take notes in the margins, I'd ask questions so that I could later review them with my coach. You need to really immerse yourself in the material as opposed to just letting it be passive. Learning doesn't work passively. Sure, you'll retain some things, but it's going to be much more powerful if you're actually actively involved and thinking through things and critically thinking through things and constantly asking yourself, do I really understand this or do I just think I understand this? And in that sense, it's very useful to have another person so that you can explain it to them. This is something that I think is really important in learning any new skill. And the other part of it, which I think translates to any skill learning or entering any new field, try to ask yourself, what do I already know that I can leverage here? What do I already know that can help me? And in my case, that was a lot of the psychology. Mm-hmm. So I tried to figure out, what am I already bringing? Because I'm starting from zero in poker, but I'm not starting from zero in life. So have I done something like this before? Oh, I've learned foreign languages before. Okay, well, poker can be seen as a new language. So you can have these different mindsets that really help you pick up the material in a both a faster and a more efficient, a smarter way.
Were you that kind of a student, though? I mean, when you were in high school or college or even graduate school, is that how you approached learning, or is this something new for you?
No, that's always how I approached learning. So I think that that's also something that I brought to the table. I'm very good at keeping my butt in my chair and actually studying hard. That's something that was always a skill of mine. So something that I brought with me as well. And I don't think that you can underestimate that. I think that was very important, because being a good learner is important when you're trying to learn something.
So are you a poker player who writes, a writer who plays poker? Are you trying to figure out your identity as you move into this different world?
Well, I think it changed multiple times. Right now, I'm a writer who plays poker. But there was a time there in 2018 when I became a poker player who also writes. I had signed a contract with PokerStars, which is one of the biggest poker companies in the world, as one of their team pros. So I was traveling around the world. And in 2018, I spent about 8 months of the year traveling. I went everywhere, Monte Carlo, Macau, just all over the world, and would spend weeks there playing. And it was exhausting. It was exhilarating. It was great material for the book, but I do not want to do that again. So now I'm very much a writer who plays poker, or a writer who will be playing poker once these things are again possible.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. I know you began playing online, and obviously casinos and some of these tournaments are closed down and probably going online. Is that where you're going to be playing, or is there something missing when you don't have human beings sitting around a table?
For me, there's definitely something missing. And I think that comes from the fact that I do have a psychology background, and a lot of what I find interesting about the game is the human element. And that's a lot of where my skill and where my edge lies. And online, it's much more about the math. It's much more just about the strategy from the game theory perspective, which is interesting. But to me, honestly, that's not what gets me going. That's not what's exciting to me. To me, what's interesting is the human dynamics. Can I read this dynamic? Can I take advantage of it? Can I insert myself into it? How do I flip it on its head? And that's much more difficult to do online. It's not impossible. You can still find certain tells online. Everyone chooses a screen name. Chooses an avatar. That gives you some information about who they are. So you can do that. But to me, sitting at a table with people and actually having those sorts of interactions is very different from sitting in front of my computer screen. That said, I am going to New Jersey in July to play the World Series online.
Oh.
So I'm giving that a shot. Because obviously, the online poker is not legal in New York, but it is legal in New Jersey.
Well, thank goodness for New Jersey.
Did you ever think you'd say that? I never thought I'd say that, but yes, thank you.
Oh, no, I say it all the time, knowing we've got lots of New Jersey listeners. Let's take another short break, and we'll get back to our conversation talking with Maria Konnikova about poker, what she learned by becoming a rather good poker player, going from sort of zero to some of the top playing. And again, she's got this new book called The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. And again, she contributes regularly for The New Yorker. She's got a PhD in psychology, which all came in handy when learning how to play poker. And again, we want to hear from the poker players in our audience. If there are any questions or comments, always you can join our conversation by sending us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Maria Konnikova about poker and her new book called The Biggest Bluff. Before we get some comments and hopefully some calls into the conversation, you mentioned obviously the pandemic, which has affected how you play poker these days. But I wonder if there's something that poker could help all of us in terms of living with the pandemic. This is something we don't have a lot of control over. We can control, you know, some pieces of it, especially if we wear a mask and we socially distance. But in certain ways, we are playing the odds. There's uncertainty. There feels like there's luck. There's chance. We have limited information. Help us learn or know what poker can help us do to deal with the pandemic.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. And it's ironic that I realized that, you know, my book was supposed to be launching during the World Series of Poker. I was going to be in Las Vegas. I had all these plans. And then the pandemic happened and live poker stopped being an option. And our lives just completely changed. And that was the very thing that I'd been exploring and writing about in my book. So I couldn't even really complain and say, you know, I can't believe this happened. Because instead, I had to say, wow, okay, this is what I've been preparing for. Poker teaches you that what you need to focus on, and this is a very, very much a Stoic philosophy, is the things that you can control.
And
to that you can control. Yes. And to not actually focus or expend your emotional energy on the things you can. It's so easy to just start worrying about the world and the fate of the world. And it's important, obviously, to be aware. But where you want to really devote your energy is, okay, what can I do? What can I control? What am I capable of? And so in terms of responding to COVID, I think you've already put a few of the things right up there. You can control your own personal actions, and you can take the best information out there. So that this is the other thing. Poker is a game of information, informational advantage, and you have to have quality information. If you make decisions based on the wrong information, based on bad information, it's going to be a bad decision. So you can focus on the quality information coming from quality sources about what you should be doing, and then do that. Wear a mask, socially distance, be mindful, be kind, be caring of others, and realize that it doesn't matter if you're bored or it doesn't matter if you're just sick of this, you have to keep doing it. In poker, so many people start playing awful poker because they get bored. They say, oh, I've been having awful cards. I'm just going to start playing hands. I know it's not the right strategy. I don't care. I'm bored. That's awful. It's such a bad way of playing, and you lose a lot of money. And I see that happening right now with COVID. People just got bored, said, you know what? I've been socially distancing long enough. I want to go out and drink. And that's the equivalent of just suddenly starting to play hands because you're sick of sitting there and not doing anything. There's so much that we can focus on, and we can focus our emotional energy on figuring out, you know, how can I make this go away faster? What can I contribute? How can I think about this? How can I moderate my own reactions? And then, you know, there will be a lot of stuff here that I can't control. And so let's wait for the people who know what they're doing to find a vaccine. Let's give them time. Let's do what we can, and let's not worry so much about the things we can't control, like other people. Just focus on yourself. That's very powerful. And let go of the outcome. Poker also teaches you to really let go of it and say, you know what, I can't control it all.
Right. And also, I think you're right, the cards don't care. Poker doesn't care. You know, I mean, and I also think about, as I was reading your book, about superstitious behavior that we feel like, well, if I play tennis, you know, if you bounce the ball three times, you're going to get a better serve than if you do it two times. And I wonder about the role of superstition, whether dealing with the pandemic or dealing with poker.
Yeah. So I am not a fan of superstition. I come down pretty hard on it in the book, because I think that what you want to be doing, what we were just talking about, is what can I control, and gain as much agency as you possibly can so that that's what you focus on. Superstition takes control away. Mm-hmm. It gives it to some random ritual or some random article. And what you're actually doing is taking that bit of control that you have and outsourcing it, giving it to something else, so it's no longer in your hands. That's the opposite of what we should be doing. So what happens when you know you have a lucky shirt and you forget it? You forget to pack it on your trip. Oh no, this is terrible. You forgot your lucky necklace. And all of a sudden your performance will actually be affected. Yeah. We've seen this with Olympic athletes. I talk about one athlete who didn't wear her lucky necklace during a race, ended up not winning it, blaming the fact that she didn't have her necklace. And then when she wore the necklace, she won. Did she really run that much worse when she wasn't wearing her necklace? I mean, yes, I think that she could have probably won, but it was the fact that her mental game was off. And I think when we have these sorts of hangups, we don't realize how negatively they can affect us when things go wrong. We have such a powerful connection between the mind and the body. It's so closely related that we need to be so hesitant whenever we give up control for some reason. So I'm not a fan of having any lucky anything. I think you need to just focus on the things that are actually going to make a difference.
Let me get some questions that we have from some of our listeners. Susan asks, how has learning these behavioral techniques for poker changed how you perceive and react in your daily life? Have you found it has enhanced or deepened your connections or relationships? Maria?
Yes, it actually has. That's such a great question. And I think the reason that it's deepened my connections and my relationships is because I've really honed that muscle of paying attention. In poker, you have to really learn to listen to what people are telling you. And by listening, I don't just mean when they're speaking. I mean, listen to their bodies, listen to the language, listen to the information they're giving off. And when you're really present, you're not thinking about something else. You're actually taking it in and trying to figure out, who is this person? What makes them tick? That is such a powerful skill to have in everyday life and in everyday relationships. We don't often listen that well. We ask a question and we're already, our mind is somewhere else. We're not listening to the response. We're not looking at people's body language. We're not actually taking in everything about them. So in that sense, I think it's really made me actually a better person, someone who's better at listening, someone who's better at understanding what's going on with people. I didn't think that's something that really surprised me. That's not something that I thought poker would teach me. Something that was a little bit less surprising that I think has also helped is that poker has really helped me work on self-control, work on emotional regulation, so that I learn to cool my emotions more quickly and not let them affect me, not let them my judgment. And that's helped in terms of not getting into major arguments or learning when to step away and say, you know what, I'm very emotional right now. Let's continue this conversation in an hour when I've had time to cool off, rather than just start yelling and accusing. So I think it's made me much stabler in that sense.
And that's the concept of tilting, right?
Exactly. What a great word. I think it's a word that we should take from poker and put into life. To go on tilt, to let emotions into your decision process.
And I always think of tilting from video games where you like bang the machine, right?
Well, that's where it comes from. It actually comes from pinball. Yeah.
Sure.
So originally the concept of tilt comes from pinball, from tilting the machine. And eventually it made its way into poker.
Roland asked, does Maria ever get distracted with the ethical questions surrounding playing for money? And we haven't really talked about money, but obviously that's, and you've won some money playing poker. We haven't really talked about money during this hour.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as long as you approach poker correctly, I don't see any sort of ethical tension there, because if people are playing and they understand what they're doing and they aren't playing above their bankroll, then it's okay. Now, of course, you're going to find people in the game who shouldn't be there. But that's focusing on things you can't control. So what I can control is to write a book and to show that it's a game of skill and to hopefully help people change their mindset so that they start learning how to actually play poker and have an understanding of it as a game of skill, rather, hey, let's sit down and gamble, which some people do. And I have a huge part of the book on bankroll management and on how you should really, what stakes you should be playing and how you should be managing that. So that's what I can control. I can try to create this environment where people understand and don't take risks they shouldn't be taking, but I can't control their choices. So ultimately, that is up to them.
More money in poker for you than writing books or writing for The New Yorker?
No, actually, because poker is also very expensive. You have to play, you have to pay for your buy-ins, and you don't always cash. You have to pay for the travel, for the hotels, and it's not like someone is paying you a salary during this time. So you have to be prepared for a lot of downswings. Sometimes you go for 6 months just paying money and not earning anything, and then suddenly you'll earn some, and it will help pay for it. But it really... It's much more like a freelancer's life than it is like a steady income.
Here's a tweet. What is something a very casual player can do to immediately improve their game and get a leg up on other casual players?
Well, since this is a very pokery question, I will answer it in a poker term. But then I will actually apply it outside of the poker table. Be conservative, play fewer hands. This is what you and I were talking about earlier. People get bored. They play too many hands. They play hands that are too weak. They're not as aware of how important position is. Position is information. The later you act, the fewer people there are to act after you, the stronger you are, because you've seen more and there can be fewer traps behind you. And too many players play too many hands and don't care about position. So that is something that will help you get better right away. And I think that's very, very true. In life, pick your battles, pick the situations you're involved in, and be aware of having an informational advantage. Try to act in those situations where you do have an advantage rather than when you don't.
Was there a moment when you were playing poker and you said, this is really fun?
Yes. And it actually happened during my first tournament, which was a charity event in New York that I didn't realize I was going to be playing. Eric tricked me. He said that I'd come and watch him play, and it ends up that he got a seat for me to play myself. I was very mad at him. And for the first part of the tournament, I was really scared because I'd never played live before. I had no idea what I was doing. But at some point, I just started having a lot of fun. I thought, wow. And this is, by the way, the Dunning-Kruger effect. When don't know a lot, you think you're much better than you are. I was like, oh, poker's not that hard. This is good. I can be good at this. This is excellent. And I was having a blast. And then, of course, I busted out of the tournament very promptly afterwards. But I had a really good time, and it really opened my mind to the fact that, wow, this can actually be fun.
You write that in when you first went to Las Vegas, you really hated it, but that you learned to love Las Vegas, but that you it sounds like you continue to hate casinos. Why?
Yes, this is true. And I learned to really like Las Vegas because there's so much there that's not the Strip. There's great food. There's wonderful people. There's a whole culture there. And I learned about it, and I learned to really appreciate that. But casinos to me, I mean, I probably shouldn't be saying this as someone who's, you know, representing poker, but I don't see poker as gambling. I'm not a fan of gambling. Huh. I don't like slot machines. I don't like roulette tables and craps tables and all of that. I find it depressing because it is luck. It's totally gambling. There's no skill involved. And I don't like things where there are no skill. I think that that's really taken to take advantage of people and to take people's money. And a lot of times people are weak and are actually playing with money that they can't afford to lose. And because there's no skill edge there, I mean, what are you really doing? You're just pressing a lever or tossing dice. And to me, that's just sad. Also, casinos are dirty and gross.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something we're much more concerned about. And casinos are also designed just to make you feel lucky, like this is your lucky
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. The design of casinos is just a brilliant screw you to the human brain and to good decision making, because you come in and there's all of this chance and hope. Wow, this could be me. I could really hit it big today. And they're designed for that. And you never have to go outside. They give you free food. They give you free drinks, free everything. You're like, wow, they love me here. This is wonderful. This is amazing. And there's no fresh air. And in Vegas, you can actually go for days without going outside because so many things are connected. And you have these internal cities like Venice. All of a sudden, you just never have to leave. And all of those things are bad for your decision making. They're bad for clarity of thinking.
Final question to you. You think children should be taught to play poker. Why? I mean, I think I know why based on our conversation, but why?
I think poker teaches you skills that are incredibly useful in life. Poker teaches you how to control your emotions and regulate, which I think is crucial for kids. And we've been trying to find a way to teach kids to be better at self-control for ages. So this is wonderful. It's one of the few things that I found that actually teaches you to think probabilistically correctly. That's a shortcoming of the human brain. And that is something that we would really do well to be good at. To learn, you know, what does 1% feel like? What does 10% feel like? What does it mean to be 75% this or that? Talking about COVID, that would really help people understand risks. But we don't, because that's not normally how the mind works. Poker teaches you that. And finally, it teaches you to focus on the decision process and not the outcome. That's such an important lesson for life. How can I make the best decisions I can, knowing I'll never know everything? And how can I be willing to learn and to make better decisions next time and analyze my decision process and let go of the outcome, because the outcome has nothing to do with my decision. I can make the right decision and lose, and I can make the wrong decision and win. And these are all such powerful skills that I think we should be teaching them to kids, and that will actually also get at the issue of the problem gambling that someone had raised earlier, because it will teach kids to look at poker correctly and love it for what it teaches you about thinking, and not have it be connected to, oh, let's just sit down and play with money.
Well, Maria Konnikova, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
A lot of fun for us as well. And again, her book is called The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. Maria Konnikova talking about poker. We're going to end things with a poker song, and this is the First Aid Kit version of Kenny Rogers' song, The Gambler.
Play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You gotta know when to hold, know when to fall, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret to